Welcome to another edition of the Team Turnbuckle Podcast on the IB Network podcast feed. I am your host, the Ravishing One, Ronel Tinsley. Joined with me as always, the six-man tag team champions, Sammy the Shooter Howe, and the head of the table, Chief Keith Fleming. My brothers, how are you tonight?
A little tuckered out, a little tired. Getting old.
No weather report.
Yeah, it's chilly here. Chilly here. It's been in the 60s and 50s. Nothing.
Oh, is it not so? Because in Georgia, oh, it's in the 70s, 80 degrees. Nice and sunny.
Oh, it's nice. Sunny here. Don't get me wrong. It was just, we're still having winter weather.
You're still having winter weather.
Yeah, this is like what LA is like in the winter. It's like in the 60s and 50s during the day.
Gotcha. Well, I'm always excited to be able to get back on and bring you guys the latest news as to what's been going down, and I'm ready to just get right into it. So why don't we go off the top rope and jump right into it? I'm going to start with Kenny Omega continuing his dominant run as he captured the Impact World Championship this past weekend at Impact Wrestling Revolution by defeating Rich Swann in a title versus title match. We also had a formerly known as Big Cass sighting at Wrestling Revolution going by his given name W. Morrissey. Now, I just wanted to say that I'm very happy for Big Cass, knowing the struggles that he had had after his release from WWE. So I'm definitely happy to see that he's back in the ring doing what he wants to do. What I wanted to throw to you guys is the impact, pardon the pun, of Kenny Omega winning this title. And is there any chance that he continues to collect more titles with possibly another promotion?
I think that we are on our way to the Kenny Omega Thanos storyline that I saw meme so much this weekend. It would make sense. Like, it really would. I mean, I can't believe that we're leading a podcast talking about a fucking Impact pay-per-view. Like, if that's not the Kenny Omega, you know, relationship with AEW effect, I don't know what is. Because did I watch the pay-per-view? No. Full discretion. I got too much. I really do. Like, I'm already at the point in the last couple of weeks where it's like with Raw, I tape it. And then if it's something I don't want to watch, I just fast forward through it. NXT is now the same way. I usually watch AEW and SmackDown Live. I can't watch any more wrestling other than what we've got on our plate. However, it was all over social media. It was all anybody was talking about. And it definitely had its effect of what they were trying to do, which is to gain interest for Impact. And, you know, I got to admit that I kind of thought this was maybe going to be a smazzy finish. I didn't know they were going to actually put the title on him. But Kenny Omega is, you know, arguably the best wrestler in the world right now. I know that there's obviously some other names you can throw out there, but he's in that class. And we talked about on this podcast, at least I did, I shouldn't speak for other people, how I was disappointed in the way they used Kenny Omega. They were waiting, and they were right to do this. And not only that, now we're going to get, and I want to ask that a little bit later, we're going to get a Hangman Page versus Omega storyline that if they weren't tag team partners for as long as they were, it wouldn't be as special. So AEW knows what they're doing. These other companies, I think, realize that, and that's why they'll play ball with them. And this was a big story.
Great pay-per-view, actually. I think that I was really impressed. It's the best Impact pay-per-view since they sort of decide, you know, cut back on cash, you know, 6 years ago. They made the most of their moment, and I'm really happy for everybody. I also wanted to say that I was really happy for W. Morrissey. You know, that was actually, I think, part of why he left the WWE was that he had a drinking problem. And he seemed, you know, I hope he's gotten it under control. I'm really happy for him. I would love to see him, you know, get a second opportunity, and I'm really thrilled for him. The Kenny Omega thing, we'll get into this more as we go on. I have a lot more I want to say, so I will just stick. We just sort of keep moving along because I have other thoughts about this.
Okay, so then we'll touch on it later. Then we'll stick with the Wrestling Revolution. on that pay-per-view was a new promo for Impact Slammiversary pay-per-view, which included the recently released WWE superstars Chelsea Green, Mickie James, Samoa Joe, as well as New Japan star Kazuchika Okada. Now, I was pretty excited. Wasn't it Okada who had shown up on AEW, what was it, about a month ago?
No, that was about 6 months ago. It was Kenta.
Oh, Kenta. My apologies. Jesus, I am so sorry. But anyway, that being said, I mostly wanted to touch on the Samoa Joe thing because we were talking about it a couple of weeks ago about his getting released and him still having that itch. If Impact is indeed signing him, what kind of Samoa Joe do you think we're going to get? Does he get a chance at the Impact Championship? And about how much longer do you guys see him in the ring?
I would be absolutely amped to get to watch him wrestle Kenny Omega. I would hope that he would get a little bit of a chance to get right physically and work some ring rust off. But, you know, I thought that he had a really great set. You know, I've talked about it, is that I'm a huge, like, low-key, a huge Samoa Joe mark. And watching him wrestle, you know, that when he came, you know, I was sort of accepted that he was not the guy that he was at his peak. And then he came to NXT and killed it. Just wrestled really, you know, he wasn't at the level where he was the best, you know, arguably one of the two or three best wrestlers in the world, but he was really good. He was good enough that I was pissed off that his match with Brock Lesnar was only like 6 minutes. So I would love to see him get the opportunity to wrestle Omega.
Matches with Brock Lesnar at that point were 6 minutes, so it's not really a knock on Samoa Joe, though.
No, it felt like they had the beginning, the first third of a really good match. And they were just getting going, and then he lost. I was very excited. I'm excited. I would love for him to get an opportunity to sort of have a goodbye tour. Somebody in the group gave the suggestion that I would love to have, which is if I'm in a fantasy book him, we talked about Punk coming back. I would love for him and Punk to wrestle it all out in like an exhibition and then have Punk Joe pull a Mark Henry in the Salmon Jacket where he snaps on Punk afterwards. And he's like, I have a lot left in the tank. But that's just
does me. He? I mean, that's my concern. I do worry about he wasn't cleared by WWE. I just hope that this is not going to be a deal where, you know, he's either A, going to be, you know, looking like The Undertaker did against Roman Reigns a few years ago at Mania, or, you know, putting himself in a position where you get hurt when Joe is talented enough on the mic that WWE flat out wanted him to continue to commentate. I get that's not what he wants to do. He has every right to, you know, want to go wrestle, but I do concern for his safety. I do concern about, you know, the, you know, kind of performances we're going to get. And obviously I miss him on WWE television being, you know, one of those heel commentators.
Yeah, no, he was really great on the commentary booth. I actually really miss him. Speaking of commentary, I guess this is a better time than any to just I want to shout out Adnan Burke for really going, you know, the second week. He really put in the work. He sounded a lot more crisp both last week and this week. So shout out to you, Adnan Burke. I knew you could do it, brother.
By the way, I was just going to touch on what we were talking about. I think it's possible that Chelsea Green shows up. I think it's possible that Mickie James shows up. I would be legitimately shocked if, unless he can't get cleared elsewhere, if Joe and if Okada, because Okada wrestled, I'll talk about this off air, but if you want to talk about New Japan or TNA missing the fucking boat, Okada did wrestle had a cup of coffee as Okado, where he basically wrestled in the fucking Kato mask because Vince Russo is a racist piece of shit.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was awful. Like, they literally had the consensus best wrestler in the world for, like, 5 years and had him in a fucking Kato mask. And they actually screwed up they were going to have a talent exchange with New Japan. And New Japan was like, well, that's what you're going to do. Fuck you.
So do they have to, though? I mean, they could have shown that even if those people were in WWE, correct? Like, they own the footage of that. They could, they've all been in that company. So, I mean, part of this could not be that they're officially coming to TNA, but just we're getting attention and getting people talking again.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, well, I just hope that if Joe does wind up going back, that he doesn't put himself in a position where he can injure himself long term or wind up punch drunk or anything of that sort.
Yeah.
So finally, off the top rope, Mickie James created a bit of an ado on Twitter about having her personal belongings shipped to her from WWE in a garbage bag and a box. Now, both Stephanie McMahon and Triple H had weighed in on this and said that the person responsible for this was let go. Do you guys think that that was just them trying to put the fire out?
I don't know. But the reason I say that is I really do think that Stephanie and Paul, I'm going to go CM Punk for y'all for a second. I think they're both good people. Like, I really do. I believe that they want to treat people with respect from everything I've heard. I don't think they agree with the sort of atmosphere that, you know, Vince has kind of let happen over the years. Because, I mean, Vince is the ultimate alpha male. And I saw some people saying, well, you know, Vince probably didn't even know about this. And that's probably true. But Vince created an environment where it's okay to do that. And it just, I mean, that's literally something. I had a fraternity brother that's how he would pack to go home on like the weekends and stuff. He just throw his stuff in a trash bag. And I don't know what her contents were. I don't even really totally understand what they were doing at the facility, but either way, it's just a bad look. And I think, yes, I mean, to answer your question in short, yes, of course they were doing it to do some damage control. But I also, I believe Stephanie and Paul. I've listened to so many interviews with Stephanie over the last few years. I really do think that she cares about, you know, the people in the company. And, you know, it's just, they corrected it pretty quickly. So, you know, they did basically all you could do with that.
Except they didn't fire if not the right person, the only person. That was a lot, like Johnny... I'm just going to name names. John Laurinaitis was infamous for this. This happened 10 years ago when John Laurinaitis was the head of talent relations. And then all of a sudden he's back and it happens again. I think that they can shit can Mark Carano because no one liked Mark Carano. That was sort of what came out. And they needed somebody to be the scapegoat. But Johnny Ace is the head of talent relations. Should have been, I mean, this is him. I think that Stephanie and Triple H, you know, were unhappy about it? Yeah, I think that some of that, I think that Triple H is one of the best executives in charge of the vice president in charge of talent relations that they've had. Just like, not exactly like kind of damning him with faint praise. I mean, he's not better than John Laurinaitis and J.J. Dillon. Not quite to Jim Ross's level, but
everybody's got to get the finger pointing picture with Triple H when you win your first title. So he's got that going for him.
I think that in fact, some of the things that I think made Triple H kind of crappy as a wrestler, you know, the ego involved, made him great as talent coordinator, was that he really wanted these people to get over because he saw it as a reflection of him. And I mean, that is a compliment. I think that's actually a really good thing. I think that it's shitty. I think that it is absolutely something that Vince McMahon has cultivated. I've been listening to a lot of stuff about Bret Hart and the Montreal Screwjob, and I think that Vince McMahon is a petty person, and I think that there's, and by the way, Keith, to answer your question, there's stuff that just is left on the road with the WWE, like gear that they have that they transport, and that was what was sent. So it's just shitty to me. And, like, I'm glad that they fired, you know, well, let me say, I'm not glad that they fired Mark Carano. I think that the...
Somebody shared a screenshot of just, like, every pretty much scene he had on Total Divas. And, I mean, you could tell, at the time, you could kind of see it watching it because my wife liked that show. But in the photos, you can just see those women hate his ass. Like, hate his ass.
Now, two things about that. First of all, it's a reality show. and there's nothing on there that they didn't want you to see. So it's the same thing as pro wrestling. Second of all, not saying that they didn't dislike him, but I've heard a lot of it was that he was kind of, you had Johnny Ace, who was, out here, glad handing douchebag yes man for Vince. And when he didn't, when he needed somebody to be the bad guy, it was Carano. So now, not saying that Carano didn't do it, and Carano, wasn't shitty to people. And
whatever, Carano defender.
Well, yeah, seriously. I just hope that whoever, be it this dude, John Laurinaitis, whoever, that they actually did do it. Because I'm with you, Keith. I do believe that, from all accounts, I believe that Stefan and Paul seem to be really good people.
Do want to say, too, that Mickey is a class act. Like, for her to send out the second post just saying, look, this is over, I sent that out, but they've reacted, I've moved on, we're all good. And, I mean, that is a good way to kind of put out the fire. Honestly, once you put that out, that was when you finally call the story losing steam. So, just again, it just shows she is a class act. One other off the top rope real quick, because I couldn't find a place to put this, at least not both of them, in here, but where the fuck is the Fiend? Let's start there.
That's a good question, because I was watching and I'm still kind of on the fence about the new Alexa right now, but it's entertaining enough, her last couple of Alexa's Playgrounds. But like, seriously, you had Bray come back to the Funhouse last week? Was it? Or sorry, the week before. Wow, that was the week before. We haven't seen him in 2 weeks. Like, you're right on point. Like, what the hell are you doing? We still haven't even gotten a finale to what the thing between him and Alexa is going to be. So I don't understand.
I think that the longer he's not on, like, just release him. Let him go. Like, I'm honestly, like, if you really want to see me become, like, the smarkiest internet smart fan, like, I hate this. I hate it. I hate it's fucking stupid. It's reductive. It doesn't help him. That didn't do anything for Orton, who's apparently doing an admittedly enjoyable comedy tag team with Matt Riddle.
Oh, I'll bring them up.
But like, it's just, I'm speechless. I fucking hate it. And I hate that so this one or two things happens that we're led into a feud where either Bray beats a 5-foot-tall woman, which, bravo, or he loses and they might as well throw him in a crate marked NXT and have him try, a third gimmick to get over.
I just don't understand the people that are not on Raw week to week when Raw is awful right now. Like, it's fucking hard to watch when you're fast-forwarding through stuff. And no Bray Wyatt, no AJ Styles or Amos. You know, the tag champs on TV since they won the titles, like,
where's the celebration?
Where are they? I mean, it's just so weird. The Fiend was literally out for what? We gave him some credit for keeping him out for so long, because they kept him out for like 4 months. But I mean, again, to me, when it's stuff like that, you need to make a report, especially when it's like he comes back, there's a really bad angle. We haven't even heard, like, what happened from his side. I'm worried that they had gold, I felt like, with The Fiend and Alexa Bliss. And now I'm worried that not only have they, as you said, I think very fittingly, Sam, after his Mania loss, like, that's it for The Fiend. Like, that's it. Like, that's it. I don't know how you can say anything else. He always loses on the biggest stages. Always. That sticks with you. And then now Alexa Bliss is going to probably get, taken right down with him. And there just would have been so many better ways to, have them split. I mean, hell, have like freaking her align with Aleister Black. There's all kinds of things you could do. And then, have them split up. But for them to be feuding with each other, The Fiend's not around, Alexa Bliss has got a doll, I don't know what's going on.
It's not even just that he lost. He lost to a single RKO. This is a guy, I mean, keep in mind that they weren't like.
He came back from being burned to death.
No, and I get it. I get exactly what you're saying, because right before he walked into the ring, he basically you know, cleaned himself up and said, you know, none of that made a difference. But you know, go ahead.
But the
one last,
you know, there was a period where it's actually weird things that we're just sort of going back to, or I'm going back to, was the Lesnar. There was a period of for like this like title reign before he wrestled Roman at 34, where he for like a year beat everyone with a single F5, because when Roman kicked out of the F5, it was going to be a big deal. And you could see them doing that. If that had been what they were doing, if they were building up, fuck, I mean, but that you build it up for the Fiend is that you would have Randy Orton one RKO, no one kicks out for like 6 months. Cool. And then you have Bray kick out of it. That's the whole point of it. And I just to have, I mean, it's just such a nuking of a character. It just leaves such a bad taste in my mouth the further and further we get away from it.
Really does, because, you know, like we had said here, he was one of the hottest things going. But let's go on and move into the superlatives and go on Wrestler on the Rise. Sammy, why don't you start us off?
My shocker.
What? My wrestler on the rise is Cesaro. And it's weird. Like, everyone thinks that I'm this, like, big Cesaro mark. I mean,
if you're comparing it to like Daniel Bryan, CM Punk, Samoa Joe, no, but like right underneath that, absolutely.
I think that he is one of the most physically gifted pro wrestlers in the world. I was never a huge fan of his. I've said this in Chikara or Ring of Honor. Like, I always thought his ceiling was sort of like mid-card champion, and I didn't realize that he was like a fucking circus strongman who like can like spin Braun Strowman on his finger like a basketball, you know? And like realizing that, like, I just don't get why they don't do really cool.
He slammed the Big Show over the top rope with ease in that battle royal. So nothing with strength should surprise you at this point. He's a strong dude.
And like, I don't get why they don't just have him do that. Like, why don't you just have him do like,
go the Braun Strowman route, right? Where he got over by basically just picking up a bunch of heavy shit.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Arnold Schwarzenegger from Predator, as I rewatched it, when he picks up the truck.
And I think that they're doing a really good job of building, you know, I don't think he'll win at, and ultimately, like, I that does matter. But I think that they're doing a good job of sort of building him as a very old school baby face. I actually think that Vince's dad, if he had had Cesaro, would have lost his shit.
Oh yeah,
like the just like strongman look and it ethnic, but
you know, I'll touch on my feelings about Cesaro a little bit later. I'll just say that my wrestler on the rise is T-Bar and Mace. After getting unmasked in their disqualification win over Drew McIntyre and Braun Strowman last week, they at least drew enough to draw some dissension between them two. I mean, they're unmasked. We still don't know what their allegiance with MVP and the possible Hurt Business is, but I'm just like, good for them that, you know, they at least are getting away from the rest of the stupid Retribution gimmick. Chief, who is your wrestlers on the rise?
I'm going to go with the RK-Bro. I love this. I'm going to go ahead and tell you. I can't believe I'm saying it, but Randy Orton apparently went to WWE and said, hey, I'd like to be paired with this guy, which I don't know what that says about Matt Riddle, because there's rumors away from screen that Randy Orton wants to like hang out with him, but that's kind of beside the point. We're talking inside the squared circle, and you notice that originally, Orton was not supposed to be feuding, or moving into this tag team. And Riddle was going to probably challenge Sheamus again, obviously, for the U.S. belt, but he was going to lose. And they kind of shifted their plan. And it was interesting how, I guess, the commentating crew was just trying to really overplay the, you know, I'm shocked Orton didn't turn on him a bit, because I guess eventually we know Orton probably will turn on him, but I thought it was really well done. Like, everything about it. Like, a lot of what Matt Riddle does annoys me. Him annoying Randy Orton is hilarious. Like, it just is. And Orton saying, like, stuff was too soon or I loved everything about it. And the tag team division needs this. This is what I've said that WWE should do more of. If you have two guys you don't have anything to do with, like, this is a perfect way to do it.
And, you know, one of the things that I did like about that, I'm sorry to cut you off, Sammy, but it's like it set up, especially after the win there and Riddle went for the pose. Wait till, you know, Randy fully comes on board and throws the Randy Orton hand straight up while Riddle's got the arms out. I mean, it'll make for a cool snapshot and, you know, it'll always keep us on our toes as to how far they'll go before Randy does what Randy does.
So I'm going to say something nice about Randy Orton, so I have to balance that out. My fantasy is that he was like, oh, this guy's getting over. I can stop that very quickly. seriously, though, I actually think that it's really good for, you know, Matt Riddle. There's been some things about him having issues with people like Rollins and Goldberg and Lesnar. Rock. And I think that it's not the end of the world to have Randy Orton, who has had issues backstage, younger, obviously, than Riddle is now, kind of, you know, working with Riddle and giving him, like, hey, man, this is how you get to be successful in the WWE.
And has admitted that, like, Triple H saved him, who also had had problems when he was younger on the roster. So, I mean, yeah, there's a lot he can learn from him.
Also, the WWE's humor is usually Babylon B level awful to me. Just like painfully unfunny and awful. R-Truth makes me laugh. And Riddle just like strolling around in a scooter while Randy Orton gets increasingly angry is very entertaining to me. And I don't know
him
why.
Hug him after the match and Orton saying too soon that the begging him to tag him in as Orton's going for the DDT through the ropes. And I mean, it just was great. You get Orton played it, I thought, perfectly. Cause he kept, you know, one minute he would look like, what is wrong with this stoner? And then the next minute being like, how can you not kind of like this guy? which, and again, anything with RK and Rhymes, I'm all for. So RK bro, love it.
Yeah, it's I really like how it sounds. Wrestler on the slide, Chief, why don't you keep it going?
Wrestler on the slide, I was gonna, you know, bring up AJ and Omos earlier, but again, our tag champions, they squashed the New Day, who I have just emphatically made a point on this podcast to say is the greatest tag team of all time. And how do they follow that up? By not being on television for weeks at a time. I have no idea what they're doing. Like, no idea. I know they don't have a very deep tag team division, so maybe they want you to forget about it, and that's why they don't put the tag champs on television. But it is just absolutely baffling that AJ Styles, who is with on Raw right now, like, what, other than McIntyre, right? Probably the workhorse, right?
Yeah.
And then you put him with this monster of a man who had this unbelievable premiere. You know, like, I know he didn't do much, but like everything went well. They had that great, you know, finishing move where he gets on top of the shoulders, phenomenal forearm, nothing since. I don't get it. If I find out, like, obviously they've got COVID or, you know, it's something else, I get it. But this is where WWE needs to give some information out, because otherwise you just look bad leaving people like this off again. A show that's been really bad the last 3 weeks.
Historically,
so they could use some tag team championship matches or AJ Styles just in a promo right now. Pretty bad.
By the way, that's very generous to say it's only been bad for 3 weeks.
Sammy, why don't you go ahead?
I went with Rich Swann, who, I mean, Keith, when you said you were surprised there wasn't a schmoz, let me tell you something. There was one thing that we were all sure wasn't happening, and that was that Rich Swann was winning that match. and God, I mean, I feel bad.
Because didn't he beat a bigger name in TNA, like, not too long before that match?
Like, he beat, I think it was Moose. But it was whatever. I mean, and they put on an amazing match. No shame to Rich Swann, but it felt like this entire feud was Kenny Omega wrestles a tomato can. I mean, there's no respect given to Rich Swann, and that didn't seem fair. And I actually thought that Impact made the most of their situation. I'm happy about that, but it did kind of bum me out that Impact was like, you know, treated as this joke, as this thing that was not even, you know, like laughingly competitive.
Yeah. And I'm sorry about that. It's really awful for Rich Swann. I'm, again, like you guys, I'm surprised that there wasn't it some kind of like screwy finish or even a dusty finish, you know, just so that we could have maintained both champions. So my wrestler on the slide, and I'm tired of putting these women here. I really don't know what they're doing, as usual with their women's tag team division. But our women's tag team champs wind up here again, because not only do we have Shayna lose, Shayna was pinned in a tag team match with Natalya and Tamina, and now they have them getting taunted by Dana Brooke and Mandy Rose, and it's just like, seriously, like, what are you doing? Can we just get a title match? Can we get something that looks like we're heading towards a title match program? But as it stands, our women's tag team division has three viable contenders currently, and you still have your champions taking losses on television. So I absolutely hated that.
Two things real quickly I want to add in that kind of reign. One, the inconsistency with the way people have been presented has been frustrating lately. Rhea Ripley was mocked openly by Nia and Shayna a week after her debut. Now, 2 weeks later, she's in a six-man tag working efficiently with them. I don't understand that. Like, I just don't. I don't get the logic in them doing that. And the other thing I want to talk about, is Sonya, like, not cleared for activities? Why are they just doing the backstage stuff with her when she was on fire? And I understand why they took her off screen, because she had, I mean, a horrific experience. But now that she's back, like, why does it seem like they're not in any hurry to get her back in a ring?
That's a really great question, because I actually was asking Cindy that while we were watching Raw. I was like, what are we doing here? I mean, don't get me wrong, I love just having Sonya back on television, but when are we going to get her back in the ring? Because, like, right before that whole thing with Mandy Rose, she was on a tear.
My assumption is that this is, they're sort of doing this slowly and bringing her along at a pace she's comfortable with. Keith, your mistake is actually thinking that the WWE remembers that stuff from a few weeks ago and doesn't think that you're a nerd for caring about it. While we're on things that grind our gears, if I go a goddamn decade without seeing X has pinned the something champion to get a title shot or a fucking distraction roll up, I won't know whether to shit or whine my watch. Cause that is literally, if the WWE, if tomorrow somebody, if I wished to a genie to be like, hey, they knowingly cannot do a distraction finish or pinning the champion automatically gets you, I don't know how they would book shows.
They couldn't do it Raw for sure.
It is the laziest, most bullshit finish, and I hate it so much. And they always do it. Like, you would think that these people who are supposed to be at the pinnacle of this fighting, you know, could you imagine a UFC fighter, you know, if every fight somebody's music hit and every month somebody's music hit, they came down. Like, oh, look, here comes Conor McGregor. Interesting. Do you really think that they would know? Like, you get used to it.
Yeah, seriously.
Sorry.
No, it's all right. So we're going to go on to Face of the Week. I'm going to start, and here's where I'm going to give my Cesaro love. I would have loved to have put him on the rise, but unfortunately, I think he's hit his plateau, like you guys said earlier. There's a snowball's chance in hell that he really wins this Universal Championship spot. I do appreciate the little bit of Daniel Bryan rub, but Cesaro even sounded a little better on the mic this past week. And considering that this is about as high as we're going to get him right now, I think he's making the most of it, and I'm absolutely enjoying every single second of it. And yes, I get it. I'm a Cesaro mark, but, you know, I'm just taking a look at the finer details, and he's putting his work in.
So Cesaro's great. I mean, you guys are both Cesaro marks, but he's great. Whoever in the group, too, is asking, like, will he get into the main event scene? Where do you think he's at right now? He's feuding with Rollins and Reigns at the same time. I mean, that's I don't know how it gets any more main event in WWE in 2021 than that. But my face of the week is Hangman Page. Man, is this guy just piling up the wins. We're going to talk about him again at the storyline at the end, because I have some questions about what they're doing and I'm worried. But he has been just, I mean, he's probably my favorite person that I've been introduced to in AEW, which is saying a lot considering you have MJF. I love Jungle Boy. There's all these guys
Kenny Omega?
Yeah, I would rather, absolutely.
That's high praise, bro.
I like his character. His character is so much more interesting than Omega's. Omega is living off his name. Like, to me, that's what makes him great. Is, you know, as a heel, is that he's got all this internet love and everything, and now he's an egotistical heel. But if he was playing the exact same role and hadn't had all that attention and stuff that I'd heard for years about him even before I really watched him, I don't think the character would be that effective. Hangman Page is like a loner, which it's so hard to pull that off. And I really do feel like he's a true tweener. I mean, just look how they've had him, you know, interacting with the Dark Order for months. And I don't think they're going to do anything with it. They just keep teasing it.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, it seems that he's got kind of just got an off again relationship with them.
When he needs help, which is okay. And I just, again, also love that he, you know, that was the first time I'd seen him use a submission to win a match. I'm pretty sure he's not lost this year. I think they said last week he had won like 15 singles matches in a row. We're heading towards the Omega versus Hangman Page title match. It's just how soon. Yeah. I actually hope it's not All Out in August. I think that's too soon, because I think if it is in August, we'll talk about it at the end.
Now that you make mention of it, I think his only loss was technically to Kenny.
Mm-hmm.
So, Sammy, who was your face of the week?
I know this is going to shock. I know that.
I'd already used that joke on the Cesaro one. So I'll
yeah, that's fair. I'm going to go with somebody who I love the way that Dave Meltzer and Scott Keith love Ric Flair. I thought that Daniel Bryan giving the rub to somebody.
You're going with someone the way I love my wife. So
I feel like it. I just want to, you know, I
mean that in the feelings inside. I'm not talking about, like, you know, sexual relations or anything. Don't.
No,
don't
no, no.
I know it goes.
It's okay if it was, though.
Hey,
not that there's anything wrong with that.
I'm just talking about, like, if you want somebody who is a huge mark for somebody, the way that, you know, the way that Meltzer and Scott Keith are for Ric Flair, I am for Daniel Bryan. And I really like that he sort of came out and was like white meat baby facing and helping out the guy who was legitimately friends with him and helping get him over, which is, I think, it just makes me happy to see. I love Daniel Bryan.
Yeah, I did, like I said, in mine, I did appreciate the rub that Daniel came out and kind of was adding to it, almost, you know, took over as spokesperson. But then again, of course, once Roman came out there, he did kind of put his focus on Daniel for just the moment. So, heel of the week, I'm going to go first and touch on exactly what we were just touching on, actually. Seth Rollins, I know we could always put Roman Reigns up there. He dropped once again, fantastic work on the mic. But I'm loving what Seth Rollins did, especially when he came out at the beginning of the show last week talking to Cesaro, talking about, look where I've elevated you to. Like, I think that was really fantastic work. We were super excited about Seth being back, and Seth is running at Seth Rollins' usual level, and I absolutely love it. I thought it was great heel work. Sammy, who did you have for heel of the week?
I went with Kenny Omega, in part because, not just because of his actions on TV, but I feel like in this era, so much of social media stuff, you know, he posted a picture of himself with the TNA title and the Impact title and the AEW title and said, I am inevitable. And I just thought that that was a nice little, you know, I thought that that was a nice moment. He is still technically the mega something champion for AAA. You know, he's going to get to fucking Ultimo Dragon in 97 belt levels, where he's got like 9 belts.
Chief.
I do want to add real quick before I, because Omega is mine as well. Can we put Seth Rollins officially in the category of guys who are just so much better as heels?
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah.
You like to burn it down? I did not.
I thought Dirty Dancing
with his wife. I mean, it was that was a rough stretch.
Awful. I thought that was the WWE did him no favors by having him feud with fucking Charlotte and Andrade right there. I'm still mad about that retroactively.
I do think Seth is. I mean, this is now like his third iteration. I know technically he's still doing the Messiah deal, but he's already changed it up a little bit. I love Seth as a heel. But yeah, I mean, it's Omega. When a guy's got three, you know, world titles, when a show's closing and he's the heel of the week. I mean, it's pretty much as simple as that. I didn't realize that he was the one that started the memes. I saw a lot of them with the belts on the rings, and it was basically his face on Thanos. I didn't know, though, that he was the one that tweeted, "I am inevitable." That's awesome.
Does make it better.
I do wonder, though, how far they're going to take this. And, you got to be really sure you know who the next person is to make this work. Because if not, this has backfired in a lot of companies where you have this, like, unstoppable champion and then the person to dethrone them, looking at you, WWE, in the last couple of years with Rollins, even Reigns. It's rough. You got to make sure you have the story. I trust AEW, though.
Stop reading my mind, because I was literally going to say, when does the first shoe drop, and which title is it that he drops? I mean, I got to imagine that you still got to make the AEW one the crown jewel. So I'm assuming that, he's going to have to drop the Impact title sooner than later, and maybe even his AAA title.
I don't know. The Impact title, you got to think, he's fought on what, like three or four straight pay-per-views for TNA, right?
It sounds about right.
At least, I mean, he may, fight once a month or whenever their pay-per-views are, basically.
Yeah, I can understand that. But you think he drops the AEW title before that one?
No. I think that he's also the AAA mega champion. It's like he's the world champion in three different companies right now.
So let's move into promo of the week. Sammy, why don't you start us off?
You want to do match or do promo?
Let's do promo.
Okay.
Did I have a promo?
It's we all had the same.
We all have the same only one.
Yeah, I mean, it's I picked that because I was like, yeah, it's sort of the default. But I've also gone that this wasn't a great week for promos outside of this.
Okay, so I'll give the answer since Sam didn't. It's MJF for his promo on Wednesday night. I got to admit, I was one of the ones that said Jericho's promo the week before was one of the best I had seen in years, especially from Jericho. MJF just smoked him, like just smoked him. And he reminds me a lot of Ric Flair in the way that he's, he's calm, he's cool, and all of a sudden that he's so good at raising his voice at just the right time, his eye movements, the way he was putting over the guys in his, in the group with them and the faction. And then just, I can't believe some of the stuff that he said, which again shows you the confidence that AEW obviously has in him and kind of the free reign that he has to say what he wants, because, he starts basically naming guys, rolling his eyes of who Jericho says he needs to beat before he considers himself great. And he's like, in case you forgot, Chris, I've already beat you. So that I'm already great. And, it was really, I mean, at this point, normal stuff. And I said, oh shit, it's been almost a year ago now, that he might be the best promo in wrestling, and took some crap for it, and probably rightfully so at that point. Right now, I don't know if you can't say that. And it's actually kind of surprising they don't allow him to get on the mic more. But maybe they understand that you get more out of it by not doing it on a weekly basis. But, I mean, anytime he gets that microphone, it's special.
Yeah. When I was watching it, I was like, there's no way in the world there's any other this week. And maybe even that work is rubbing off on Wardlow, because even when Wardlow had his 30 seconds, Wardlow sounded crisp, had his thoughts in line. It's not like he was choppy. Looking directly into the mic, like, those guys are putting in such fantastic heel work. And like you said, MJF's facial expressions, the way he can just flip the switch, just smoking hot.
One other thing real quick, too, is it's so important, especially with a guy like Wardlow who you talked about. They taped that. So Wardlow may have got 5-6 tries at his 30 seconds. And that's so big. And it's one thing I really wish WWE would do more of, is, you know, more backstage, especially for younger guys who don't have the experience, because it really gives them a chance to get it right. Now, I don't know if we can always have confidence in WWE, even if you give them all the shots that they're going to get it right. But and then this one last thing is, what did CM Punk say in that famous, you know, pipe bomb, right? There's so much power in that microphone. And MJF really might be the first guy since CM Punk that I feel that way, that when he gets that microphone in his hand, it's just like, you got to listen. You got to see. And he goes from being, yes, a guy that's made a name for himself to, holy shit, this guy is like one of the biggest stars in this company. And I'm very excited about the future for him. And I love that he brought up, too, that he hadn't lost.
You know, I actually have to piggyback off of that thought, because I almost had, like, gotten really nitpicky, because last week's backstage promo for Rhea Ripley, I was able to tell, and I don't know if it was just me or if anybody else caught on to that, that she was reading that, because she was not staring at the interviewer, and it just kind of ticked me off. And with Lashley coming out to the ring this past week in glasses, and I had to take a backseat to my own self and just be like, you know what, Lashley's still not really a fantastic promo. So if him coming out being cool, using the glasses to hide that he was reading, if we're still trying to get Rhea more fluid on the mic, you know what, let it go. Let them just do what they do. I mean, because I do love both entertainers.
Here's another idea. Don't make them read carefully scripted promos that require them to wear glasses. I know that I get what you're saying. I'm just saying that it's one of my pet peeves.
All right. So match of the week. Chief, why don't you go right ahead?
Y'all picked kind of my answer, so... Because honestly, Darby Allin, Jungle Boy, in my opinion, was the match of the week. But with that being picked, I'm going to go with a Hoss fight. I really enjoyed Strowman and McIntyre, the main event on Raw.
If you would like to switch, we can, because I was heavily eyeballing that one.
Whatever you want to do, bro.
You and I switch, and you can talk about all right, exactly
so,
what you want to talk about.
Darby versus Jungle Boy, again, I know that every time we talk about Darby Allin, I remind you of how I misjudged him and didn't think he was that talented. He's extremely talented. I didn't understand why they put the belt on him. You get it now? God almighty, this is like 7 weeks in a row that he's put on an absolute banger. And that is, like, what did we talk about? The mid-card title has been in WWE probably in the last decade. You could probably go back even further. I don't want to do that. But John Cena, when he had the U.S. Open Challenge, right? That was like the best stretch, because every week you knew John Cena was going to take on some guy that you enjoyed to watch wrestling, and it was going to be great. And we've kind of reached that point with Darby Allin right now. And I just can't get over every time I see Jungle Boy immediately thinking of Luke Perry, who – you know, I have a very fond spot for being a kid that grew up watching Beverly Hills 90210, and then just knowing that, you know, he tragically dies. And that's one of the coolest scenes I know I'd mentioned before, to make sure to watch the documentary on David Arquette. But that was one of the neatest parts of it, is at the very end when he has that crazy, I guess you call it like a death match with all the glass and stuff, and he gets cut. It's actually Luke Perry that is there taking him to the hospital to get stitched up. And so to see somebody who looks so much like him and with so much talent, that's just special to me and, you know, my childhood. So I'm going to always root for Jungle Boy for that reason. But you were saying again with these two guys, Hangman Page and MJF. I mean, you want to talk about a talented quartet moving forward, and they're doing a great job of building them up slowly, which is, I think, probably the right way to do it.
And it's, yeah, you're absolutely right. And those are guys who will easily be the cornerstones of AEW a decade from now. So I will take yours because I was heavily impressed with Braun Strowman. Braun is really leveling up right now. He's playing that tweener role so fantastic, but it's just he's not being methodical or plotting anymore. It's like he knows what he's doing. The program, I mean, Drew has just been lights out in the ring for the past year, but
let's be honest, he had to get into the main event too. They couldn't put themselves in a position where, I'm assuming, Lashley is gonna retain the title. You can't have Drew losing two pay-per-views in a row. And it's like, unfortunately, Strowman is probably getting ahead of this match to take the pin, but
King take a pin? The old Baron Corbin King take a pin?
Pretty much. But I mean, I still am excited about it. And I think Strowman would, you know, it was Strowman, Lesnar, and who was it that had such a good match not too long ago when they had that triple threat? Was that Reigns? I think it was. And that was an incredible triple threat. That was been now like 4 or 5 years ago, actually. But I think that that's what they're leading to, and it makes sense. Like, I'm okay. We've talked about this on the podcast many times. Predictable is okay as long as it's executed well.
The mine was, you Philistines, was Omega versus Swan, which I thought it had me by the end of it going, okay, Kenny's winning. Maybe. I thought that it did a lot to get Rich Swan over. I thought it was a great match. I thought it was a great title match. I thought, as I said, I thought that everything, you know, we've talked about things like the celebrity. I'm going to make the comparison between Mike Tyson and Lawrence Taylor. The reason why Lawrence Taylor headlining WrestleMania 11 did nothing, and Mike Tyson helping being a guest referee at WrestleMania 14 was a huge deal, was that WWF in 1995 was the drizzling shits, and WWF in 1998 was great. And the reason why Kenny Omega showing up was helpful was because they built a great pay-per-view around him that ended with an absolute banger of a match. And I might even say early candidate for match of the year.
Really? I'm going to have to go and watch this match. So, storyline you should be paying attention to. Sam, why don't you start us off here?
So the WWF did their earnings call last week, and they are saying that they are planning on having, you know, I don't know, I might have misread this, but I inferred, you know, completely filled shows starting in the second half of the year, which would be as soon as July, which is coming up on us like a freight train, which, you know, it's not a bad thing.
Know where SummerSlam is going to be this summer? You don't have
to say it with hesitation. It's like people need to go get fucking vaccinated so we can go out and do stuff. Like this is literally the reward for the last year and a half. We want to start our lives again. It's okay for that. So like, you have to say it with hesitation. Yes, it's a fucking great thing. I can't wait to getting a big crowd of people and know that I'm not going to potentially kill somebody. So yes, I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, as am I. I know I'm in my own thing about this, and which we could talk about later. But I totally want to be in an arena. I would love, like I said before, a live team turnbuckle with all three of us in the same location would just be just top shit right now.
Especially if RC pays the bill.
Keith, what do you got looking forward to?
I don't know if y'all had seen this report, but they're saying that the Blood and Guts match is going to be War the, Games? Huh?
Is that the Bobo War Games?
I don't know what they're calling it. It's going to be the entire episode of Dynamite from start to finish. They're saying that there may be a taped promo here and there, but from AEW Dynamite starting not this Wednesday, but the following, from 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock, the only match is going to be the Blood and Guts match, which maybe they realize that the, you know, This is, I mean, this could be insane. Because, I mean, you really think about it, that's 10 really good workers. And, I mean, are they going to really go to, like, an hour and a half? Like, say even they have 30 minutes of promos and stuff. Are these guys going to go an hour and a half? That's something you remember. Because, like, what has AEW done this year? It's probably the most memorable thing. The women's match, right? That was something different. We hadn't seen it. And it got a ton of buzz. And I just wonder, are they going to do something crazy where these guys go for an hour and a half, roughly? Sign me up.
I'm just so sad. It's so awful. This match was taken from me. I was supposed to see this at Newark last year. That was supposed to be my War Games. I was supposed to see War Games.
I actually think it worked out. I mean, I know it didn't for you, but I actually think that these 10 guys make so much more sense last 10.
No, you're absolutely right. And if what that report is true, I can't wait for the type of spots that they're going to have in this, because it's going to be an eye opener. That's for sure.
Jericho better get on a treadmill though.
Oh yeah. God. Yeah. Oh. I love you, Chris, but yeah. Mine is, and I'm surprised that Sammy didn't even touch on this at all, considering the promo that we had gotten from Roman Reigns this past week. Are we in the final stages of the Daniel Bryan farewell tour?
So here's my feeling on it. We joke around about what a big Daniel Bryan fan I am. Recently, my parents were cleaning out the house, and they found a cache of some of my old like wrestling tapes, like VHS tapes. And one of them was The Era of Honor Begins, which is the first Ring of Honor show that had I'm trying to remember who else was on it. Low-key, Chris Daniels and Bryan Danielson. I've legitimately been watching Bryan Danielson, the American Dragon, Daniel Bryan, whatever you want to call him, Lloyd Bonnier, since I was 16 years old. And, you know, when he had to retire in 2016, it was very, you know, it was something that was very emotional for me. And I, you know, eventually got to the point where I was like, hey, he's done. Like, he's not coming back. It's what's best for him with his brain, knowing what I know about brain injuries. For the last 2 years, almost 3 years, it's been found money to me. I said this in the group, he's headlined two WrestleManias. He won the Undisputed World Championship beating Triple H, Batista, and Randy Orton in the same night. He's beaten John Cena. He's beaten everybody there is to beat. He's won every title in the company that matters. I'm not going to count the 24th.
I'd argue with the most memorable WrestleMania match since WrestleMania 30.
Yep. He has had banger matches with AJ Styles.
Two of them, actually, now.
He's had banger matches with Cody. With Kofi. There's nothing left for him to do in the WWE unless they're going to build the promotion around him, and that's not going to happen. So if
he can't go into that HBK role of just putting guys over. And that's basically what HBK did for the last 2-3 years before he started his Undertaker feud.
He kind of fast-tracked that, you know, if you look at this past 6 months of the guys he put over.
I mean, and truthfully, he's been in the WWE now, their system, for 11 years. And I would dearly love for the opportunity to see him wrestle Kazuchika Okada, Kenny Omega, Tetsuya Naito. There are just so many people that I would love to watch him wrestle that aren't in the WWE. And truthfully, he's going to be 40 on May 22nd. I know that because he has the same birthday as my oldest friend. He is going to be 40. I would love for him to go and do three years just touring the world, wrestling in AAA, wrestling in AEW, wrestling in New Japan, coming back, doing like a year-long, two-year-long thing and wrapping up at 45. That would be great. Or he could just quit and be, you know, a dad, whatever he wants to do. These last 3 years have been found money, and whatever makes him happy, I'm excited for.
He's not going to retire. I can promise you that.
Yeah, there are a few AEW people I would love to see him in the ring with. Well, we've gotten to the end of the show. Sam, is there anything you want to plug before we get out of here?
Sorry, this is before we get to that. Just one thing I wanted to say, because we were talking about Hangman and Omega. Hangman's not winning that first match.
I'm sorry. That was what I was going to bring up. That's a mistake. We saw this with Cassidy. He hadn't been the same since his loss to Jericho. Has not been the same. It's a huge mistake. It's exactly what I was bringing up. He needs to beat him the first time they face each other. He's already lost to him the first time they faced him. He would be 0-2, and they would kill him as a star. So, I'm serious. We saw this with Cassidy. Like, he has not been the same since that Jericho program. And RC was 100% right. I was wrong. I said, it's you know, smart, blah, blah, blah. Nope. And it's the same deal. Hangman is in the same spot, especially losing the first one. So if it's going to be August and he's just going to lose, they better find another dance partner, because I think that would be one of the biggest missteps that they have made, maybe with the exception of Cassidy Jericho.
And you guys were just talking about how hot he has been.
I think it's too soon, even in August, to take the title off of Omega.
I'm not disagreeing with you. It just doesn't need, he doesn't need to be beating Hangman Page.
I didn't mean to die, it's but okay. I didn't want to say that he is likely going to lose, and they will likely probably a fuck finish because, hey, Kenny Omega doesn't need clean wins anymore, apparently, unless he's wrestling Rich Swann. Got to keep Moxley strong, guys. He's been really entertaining in the room.
It's heel, man. That's the way heels are. Like, I mean, it's always been that way. You're either a monster heel or you're kind of a cheating, snarmy heel. I mean, it's always been that way. As an adult, I get frustrated with it, but
it is what it is.
The way back.
Anyway, rabba, rabba, rabba. plugging the IB Spot, the Sports Podcast Network, the IB Sports Patreon, the $5 All-Star. I'm excited for the Storyline Podcast that we're going to do. We have one more. We are 3/4 of the way done, and I'm knee deep in research and writing about the second series that we're going to do. So I'm really excited for that. Excited for people to listen. That's what I'm plugged right now.
Keith?
We put out the final Falcon and Winter Soldier podcast.
Excellent job, Sunday. As always.
Appreciate it. It was not all positive, but I think overall it was really good. You should definitely check that out. And then Mortal Enemies, Joe Matz and Alan, a.k.a. Actively Lazy, without me there to mediate, are doing, I think, 4 podcasts together this week. Let's watch the sparks fly. I hope Alan makes them say Silky Johnson 1,000 times. It's the quarterback one is out. I listened to it. It's really good. They're both super smart guys.
That's morning reading for me,
but, it is going to be interesting to see them too, because they definitely have a, almost like a sibling rivalry, I guess we'd say.
Well, I'm going to plug my usual. Find me at official Ronel Tinsley on Instagram. You can find me at Harvest Creditors, Ronel Tinsley on Facebook. If you have any issues on your credit report, you just want to get that score higher, get at me. If you mention the Team Turnbuckle Podcast, save $100 on starting your services, including the ability to write your living will, trust, and power of attorney. And with that, that has been another edition of the Team Turnbuckle Podcast. For Sam the Shooter Howe, for the head of the table, Chief Keith Fleming, I am the Ravishing One, Ronel Tinsley, and we will see you guys soon.